On this episode of Confetti, we discuss what you need to do to help your clients find the right venue for their wedding.
Confetti, a wedding planning business talk show. Confetti.
Debbie Quain, you're listening to episode 359 of Confetti, the Wedding Business Talk Show. Thank you for joining me. If you aspire to be a phenomenal wedding planner, that's what the show is all about. To learn more about what goes on here, please visit confettitalkshow.com. There you'll find archived episodes and much more information and links to anything you hear me talk about during today's episode. If you're looking for additional information about being a great wedding planner, please check out weddingsforaliving.com. There you'll find free articles and tips about being a great wedding planner. And then if you're interested in running your own part-time wedding planning business, please visit weddingbusinessguide.com for downloadable forms, audio classes, and more. Okay, well, welcome. Whoa, I had to cut that off in a weird way because I have my wrong audio today. But I want to say a huge welcome if you're part of the live chat. And if you're on the telephone, a huge welcome for you. If you're on the telephone and you'd like to be part of the live chat room, please go to confettilive.com. And if you're in the live chat room and would prefer just to listen via telephone, if you're on the move and it's just easier to maybe use your cell phone to listen in, then the number to call is 213-992-4358. Okay, so a huge welcome again. Typically, I record the show on Tuesday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern, but as I was explaining prior to the 8 p.m. start, I had a bit of a change in my schedule where I had to help a client with an event, which actually wasn't a wedding, on Tuesday, which sort of changed things up. I want to share a few resources with you as always. If you are beginning your wedding planning business, or maybe already in the throes of your wedding planning business, it really helps to have a professional outlook with a telephone number. And the resource I have used for several years for my wedding business is a service called Freedom Voice. And you can find out more about the service at tryfreedomvoice.com. And what that will provide is a virtual telephone service. It's almost like having a 24-hour receptionist. What I mean by that is this: for less than $10 a month, you can get a local telephone number or a toll-free number that you can provide to your clients, your prospects, to anyone as it relates to your wedding business. And with that, you'll get a voicemail and mailbox extensions so that you can have extension 1, extension 2, extension 3, which you can assign to different people on your team, your wedding planning team, or just assign to different departments. Maybe you want people who are calling about wedding day services to call to select extension 1. Maybe you want people who are calling about invitations to select extension number 2. So there are different things that you can do. You can also use it for an RSVP service, and I'll explain about that in a moment because I've received quite a few questions about that feature. But as I said, it's less than $10 a month. Currently, you'll get about 300 minutes each month, which I challenge you to go through unless you're making lots and lots and lots of phone calls and a lot of phone calls using the service, or a lot of incoming calls. Then you're probably not going to go over that. But if you do, then you can go to the next level, and it's still very affordable. The resource, the link that you want to go to is tryfreedomvoice.com. And the best part is you can try the service out free for 30 days to see if it's for you. It's up to you if you want a local or toll-free number. A lot of us are getting local numbers now because what we do appeals to a lot of our local brides and grooms in the area. But it doesn't have to be. You can have a toll-free number, which kind of gives a bigger business impression, but works really well if you have maybe a lot of your clients and prospects are calling in from someplace other than your town and you don't want your area code to be associated with your business. So, for example, in the Washington, D.C. area, 202 is the area code for D.C. But if I want it to appeal on a nationwide level, then it might be better for me to have an 800 number. In the past, an 800 number was meant that you wouldn't have to pay for the call. But with so many people with mobile devices, and we're getting, you know, few and fewer people with a landline phone, it doesn't have as much of an impact, but still can be an impressive look for your business. With Freedom Voice, you can actually make outbound calls using the service so that your number for your business shows up when you make the call. But if you have a toll-free number, and I experience this almost always, when I make a call and people see a toll-free number on their phone, they don't want to take my call unless they recognize my number because they believe I'm a telemarketer or maybe a bill collector. So my call isn't always, I don't always get a response. People don't pick up. But when they get the voicemail and they realize it's me, usually then I'll get the call back. But you can have it either or even both if you choose to. You can personalize the service with hold music or a hold message. Totally up to you how you want to do that. I've been promising for a while, shame on me for not doing so, but I said I was going to show you how to do the RSVP setup, which is sort of what it is. It's like you're doing the greeting in bits and pieces. So you don't, if you call someone's voicemail and you want to leave instructions for them, if you leave all the instructions in one greeting, if you want them to do two or three things, they're likely to forget the second or third thing by listening to the one greeting. So with Freedom Voice, you can break it up. You can say, you know, the first greeting, please leave your name after the beep. Beep. Thank you. Please let us know how many guests will be attending the event. Beep. And then the person can say, you know, two of them, you know, two. And then the third part might be, please let us know. We're providing a selection for our menu item. We are offering, oh gosh, Debbie, I'm botching that. So menu item might be your choice of chicken or beef. Please let us know after the tone which entree you prefer. Then the person can say, you know, chicken or beef, right? So chicken. And then that's three, you know, and then the last greeting will be, thank you so much. We've got your information. We look forward to catching up with you soon or whatever. But there's a way to sort of set up that greeting. And once you do it, it's done. And I take it for granted because I've had the service for 10 plus years, but I need to break it down and show you how to do that. So I promise you that I'll do that. Maybe that's something we should do on the Google Hangout that I'm working on. So check out TryFreedomVoice.com. TryFreedomVoice.com. It's a really, really great service. And yes, there are other services that you can use to do the same thing, like Google Voice. I think Grasshopper, eVoice, but I like Freedom Voice. I've been with them for a while. If only they were, you know, if Freedom Voice were a man, I'd be in a committed relationship. but if you need to speak to someone, you can speak to someone. You can call customer service and talk to someone and explain, you know, hey, this is what I'm trying to do. It's not working. Or is there a way to do this? Or can you suggest how I can do this? For example, you might want to get a toll-free number for your business and then get a local number that goes directly to a certain extension. You can do that and they can do that for you, you know, if you call in. So check out TryFreedomVoice.com. Larissa's saying she loves Freedom Voice. Wonderful and can't stand. I'm not going to say the other brand, but thank you, Larissa. I'm glad you enjoy it. I love Freedom Voice. I really, really do. So check out TryFreedomVoice.com. Hey, is that Deborah Britton? Hello, Deborah. I haven't seen you for a while. Welcome. I know you left a message and I got it in your email. So it's wonderful to see you. Really, really wonderful to see you. Nancy, hey, good to see you too. I'm just kind of looking through. Adrian's here. Gabrielle, I don't like to call out names because I'm going to leave someone out. Helga, fantastic. And Tarika, as I mentioned earlier. Kamara, hey, good to see you. Bisola, I hope I'm saying your name correctly. Mona, Shakira, and a host of others. Wonderful. Ladies, because I don't know if I'm speaking to any gentlemen, you know, feel free to post. I'll say ladies and gentlemen. I can't make assumptions, right? Please feel free to post any URLs that you haven't shared with others as I'm going through tonight's episode, because I know for sure I will not go beyond 45 minutes. It's not fair for me to have you here longer than that. If you are a Wedding Business Guide member, I haven't forgotten about our September live class. That's going to happen next week. So I'll send out an email with details for that. Okay. So Wedding Business Guide will have a live class next week. Okay. So for today's topic class, I wanted to talk about helping your clients find the spot to tie the knot. sounds fantastic, even if I do say so myself. So, you know, nothing can really happen for your client's wedding until there is a venue or two. You can start getting all the other bits and pieces, wheels in motion, but everyone's going to come back to saying, you know, well, what date is the event? And the date is pretty much driven by the venue for the most part, unless your clients are hell-bent on a specific date and will work venues into that date. Usually it's the other way around, right? We may have in our heads that we want to get married in the second Saturday in June, but unless you can find a venue, your clients can find a venue that matches their budget, their style, the area for that date, then it may be they find the perfect venue, but they discover it's not available the second Saturday in June. It may have to be the first Saturday in July. So the venue, the spot, you know, the venue is a big deal. When you, as a wedding planner, I hope that you're not waiting until you have clients to start looking for venues. You know, you want to do this as on an ongoing basis. And that really should be the case, no matter what vendor, what we're talking about, whether it's vendor or venue. You want to make sure that you always have some places, some resources that you can turn to, because if you wait until you have clients, you're wasting time, and then your clients are going to be somewhat disappointed when you turn around and say, well, I don't know of anything yet. I'll find that out. I mean, that may be the case if they're saying they want flamenco dances for the reception. That may not be a resource that you have off the top of your head, but I hope that when someone says, we want to get married, ideally around June, and we have 150 guests. Do you have any places that, you know, do you have any places, any venues in mind? My hope is that you're able to say, yeah, I have a couple of places that that come to mind. And as a word of advice, even if you don't, just say, I have a couple of places that I have in mind. Say that and then start looking frantically. So when you meet with your clients, and I'm saying clients, don't start doing all of this if they're prospects, okay? Be very careful about what you do for couples before they sign the dotted line. It's going to happen to you at least once. You're going to do work. You're going to get excited for your prospects. And then they're not going to go ahead and do business with you. And you will have done a substantial amount of work. Been there. So you want to be careful about what information you provide. I'm not saying hold everything back, but be careful about the legwork that you do. You shouldn't be doing any legwork for your clients. So you want to find out, how many rooms do they need? Do they want the ceremony and reception in the same place? Is that an option? If your clients are saying that they need to be married at the specific location, a house of worship, then typically that would mean that the reception would be at another location. Not always, because the ceremony site may have space for that reception to take place. But you need to ask that. Don't make assumptions. You need to find out if that ceremony needs to take place at a specific location. And then you need to also think about things like the cocktail hour. This is the space between ceremony and reception. It's like a warm-up. It's a mini cocktail party before the wedding. Is it mandatory? No, it isn't. But it's a good way, if your clients are taking pictures after the ceremony, this is a great way for their guests to be entertained in the meantime. So you've got to find out the answers to those questions. But ask them, do they prefer the ceremony, or do they want the ceremony and reception in the same place, or do they maybe don't feel any kind of way? However that turns out. If you find yourself in a situation where ceremony and reception are two different locations, please, please, please be diligent and make sure that there's not a huge distance between the two. You may have heard me tell the story about a wedding that I planned here in the DC area. The wedding was in Kensington and the reception was in, what part of Virginia was that? It's the best part of an hour's drive. That's too far. I would say nothing more than 30 minutes away. It really shouldn't be nothing more than 30 minutes away between ceremony and reception. So keep that in mind. You may find a place that's ideal, but if that distance is too far, guests are going to get lost. And it's just difficult for you. It's a selfish reason, but it's a difficult thing for you and your staff to maneuver between places back and forth. Did I tell you that we got where the wedding reception for that place? What part of Virginia was it? Gainesville. If you're familiar with the D.C. area, or even if you're not, look it up. Kensington, Maryland to Gainesville, Virginia. That was the difference between the two locations. And then when we got to Gainesville, one of my assistants forgot her purse. And we had to go back to get her purse. This was at the end of the night. Okay. But, you know, it's too far. So the timing, the distance is a big deal. So where to look? Everyone's online. You definitely want to browse, go on, you know, do your searches and look for venues. But, wedding reception locations, some places, definitely you're going to get some results. But you want to start thinking outside of the box. That's a very cliche term, but not every venue is advertised as a wedding venue. So this is why I'm saying you want to do this now. Start looking at places. When you go to an event, look at it and say to yourself, could we do a wedding here? Would this work? And if so, then you want to get in contact with those folks and learn all you can about that site beforehand. Come back to my favorite vendors, caterers. Caterers know what's up. They know where the venues are. Talk to them. So when you go out and meet with caterers, and even if you're not meeting with them, ask them, do you know, what great venues are there? Where have you worked recently? And they'll tell you. Because caterers, a lot, especially the off-premise, an off-premise caterer is a caterer that's preparing the food at one location, but it's being dropped off. The final destination is someplace else. It's not like a built-in kitchen, like at a hotel or like a country club where it's all happening on site. They're moving from point A to B. So they know these locations. They know these venues, and they're probably preferred caterers at certain venues. So talk to them. The florists also know what's up with wedding venues. Ask them. Because they're doing the decor, they are usually called in to a lot of off-site venues to transform the place. So make sure you check with the florists and the caterers to find out about some great spots. And remember, you starting off by putting wedding reception or wedding ceremony in your search online is a good starting point, but it's not the only way to go. A lot of venues don't advertise as wedding venues, and there could be a reason for that. Maybe that's not the kind of business that they want, but you shouldn't, because you don't see that doesn't mean you shouldn't inquire. It may, a lot of us have fallen into the trap of believing that a wedding needs to be this big, gargantuan, was dying to use that word, a big gargantuan affair, and it doesn't have to be. So someone can have a wedding for 30 guests and maybe they don't have the space to do that at home. You can find a venue for them for 30 guests that maybe was never considered to be a wedding venue. So definitely think outside of the box. When you find a venue, the very first thing I would suggest doing if you've yet to visit that place ever is to pick up the telephone. We're all online and sending emails, but the reason I like the phone is because this is going to be the precursor to the level of service that you and your clients are likely to receive based on the way they answer the phone, if they answer the phone, how long it takes for them to return the call, how do they sound, like they want your business, or they couldn't care if Sunday fell on a Monday. These are the things you cannot determine via email or a website with beautiful pictures. These are the things that you can only determine with a telephone call. It may not be the full story. You know, you never know who's answering the phone. It may be someone that just happened to pass by and picked up the phone. But it gives you an idea as to what may be coming down the pike. So you definitely, I would say, create a short list, you know, with a few places that work based on your client's budget, their style, their guest count, you know, location, and then make a phone call and let them know that you want to come and take a look at their venue. And you just say something as simple as, I'd like to see your venue for clients that are looking for a great location to host their wedding, and let them take it from there. They may ask you for, you know, the number of guests and the style, but you just want to come and take a look at it anyway. Because the thing is, if it doesn't work for the clients that you have right now, it's something that you've got to keep in mind for down the road, right? So, you know, schedule a time and try to do this with someone who's knowledgeable about the site that's there to sort of walk through, not just someone who can answer your questions, because you do want to have a list of questions to ask the venue when you get there. You want to take some great notes. Okay. Your first visit to a venue be the visit that you have with your clients. Go there by yourself, because you've got to answer some questions. You should have a list of questions that you need answers to. Things like, how many weddings happen at the same time? If it's one venue, then it's one venue. If it's one room, then that's it. It's probably just one wedding, but at a time. But, you know, can they do two weddings each day on a Saturday? Like, can they do an early wedding and then they'll flip the room, you know, clean the room up and do an evening wedding? How many weddings at the same time? When they're talking about rental time, the space, like if they say it's for 4 or 5 hours, you want to make sure you find out if that includes setup and breakdown time. If it doesn't include setup and breakdown time, you need to account for that, right? Is the entire venue available, or are there some parts that are off limits? Like, you may have your eyes set on that garden area, which would be perfect for guests to sort of walk out to later on. And then you may find out by making an assumption that that's not part of the deal. So you want to ask the question specifically, is the entire venue available? Are there any portions of this that are off limits during an event like a wedding? And I will provide a list of questions that you should have. I know Wedding Business Guide, there should be a list of questions, but you want to look at things like outlets, electrical outlets, entry and exit. Is there a ramp for wheelchair access? What do the bathrooms look like? That's a big, big deal. If the bathrooms don't look right, no one's going to want to use them, us ladies. So that's a deal breaker for me. If I go in the bathroom and, you know, my face, my nose is way, way high in the air, it's not even an option. I'm not even going to entertain it for my clients. So this is why you want to go there before your clients and sort of scope the place out. But the most important thing as wedding planner is to go with your initial gut instinct. If you get there and the feeling is like, there's a reason that you're feeling that. You may not be able to put your finger on it right away, but that initial gut reaction, that initial instinct that you get there, your clients are probably going to feel the same way, and their guests are likely to feel the same way. Could be off. I mean, a place may look very drab and you may be able to get a wedding designer or florist that can transform it. But if your gut instinct is not a good one, there's a good chance that others will feel the same way. You also want to keep in mind as to how much space you really need. I don't have the formula here, but there is a set formula for based on whether you're having a sit down dinner type reception, or if it's a buffet, of course, how many guests, the size of the tables. So you need to keep that in mind. Talk to the person that's there, the venue person, let them know, how does this work for sit down? What's it like? What do you do for cocktail area? Where does the dance floor usually go? They should be able to provide you with several options for the layout too. I know a few spots where Let's see a few venues here where it's always laid out the same way. The dance floor is always here. The tables are always there. The escort table is always set up in that corner, and they don't deviate from that. A lot of times I may try to shake things up, but there's usually a reason why things are set up a certain way. So pay attention to that. But without being rude or obnoxious, you want to see if there are some other options that you can set up for your clients. And then you want to also, once you start going to venues, you want to take pictures and video. It's so easy now because of, our smartphones and iPads and so forth, mobile devices. Ask permission first, though. Not every site wants you to do that or permits you to do that. So ask if it's okay to take pictures, shoot video. But after you've gone to two places, it all begins to get mushy in your mind. At least it does for me. So pictures can help. And if you're doing video, what I would suggest doing is, from the moment you walk into the building, just shoot the video that way as you're walking in front of you, and then sort of turn to the right, turn to the left, or even do a whole 360 slowly so that you can see what that looks like. And then maybe you can show that to your clients before they actually make the site visit themselves, so they can get an idea of what it is that they're looking at. And this is great for you to keep on file so that you know what's going on with each venue. You'll know You'll remember what the carpet looks like. You'll see what the wall treatments are like, what the ceiling is like. That's important too. Pay attention to how high the ceilings are and what kind of ceilings are there. Are they, the ceiling tiles? Is it like an open framework? Those are the things you have to pay attention to, Mr. Ms. Professional Wedding Planner, so that you can share that with your clients. Okay, it's important to know those things now as opposed to later. And then after you've been through a few venues, you want to sit down and compare the venues after your visits. There may be different, there'll be pluses and deltas, pluses and minuses for each one. So, present those to your clients. But if you can present it in a concise way, saying, venue A, the great things about venue A is this, this, and this. The flip side, though, is this, this, and perhaps that. Present it in that way. You want to save your clients time. Yes, they are the ultimate decision makers, but you want to guide them in the right direction and explain why you're suggesting something or explain why you're saying that something may not work. Again, ultimately, they get to make that decision, but your role as a professional is to guide them in the right way. And the more venues you visit, the easier it becomes. When you're comparing venues, please be careful. I know a few shows ago, I think it was 5 Wedding Words, I talked about off-premise and on-premise. So an on-premise venue is something like is a venue like a restaurant, a hotel, a country club, where the kitchen and all of that stuff is all in one. It's all on-site. An off-premise venue is a place that's sort of like a shell. The caterer comes in to provide the food. So if you find a place that's great, but it's off-premise, and you find another great place that's on-premise, how are you going to compare the two? Because the on-premise site is going to have a whole lot of things that the off-premise doesn't, primarily food. So what you have to do is you have to compare the off-premise catering quotes, add that to the venue cost, and then start comparing that way, because cost is a big factor. So if you're looking at a venue and it's only $2,000 to rent or only $1,000 to rent, that might be a great deal. But if the off-premise caterer is charging, $100 per head versus the hotel that's charging $120 per head, what are we really comparing? Because we've got to add the cost for the venue and any other bits and pieces that may not be a part of it, like, valet and things like that. So make sure you're comparing apples to apples, right? If you've got off-premise, if you're looking at an off-premise site, you have to get a venue which doesn't have its own catering staff. You have to get off-premise catering quotes first so that you can compare with on-premise venue quotes. Does that make sense? I don't know if you're getting what I'm saying, but you may don't just look at the hard and fast rental fee and try to go on that. You've got to get quotes from the off-premise caterers to see what the costs really are and what you're really getting for the prices. The off-premise caterer just providing food, and you're going to have to get linens and chair covers. Well, that's going to add to the cost if the hotel or country club is including all of that in their per head cost, because that's normally how catering is done. It's by per person, i.e. per head. And the last point that I want to make is there are lots of alternatives for getting married locations. A wedding at home is one, but please don't believe that a wedding at home, a traditional full-scale wedding at home, is going to save money. On the contrary, complete opposite for the most part. But that's an option. A destination wedding is an option. A destination wedding can be at another destination in the same country or a destination far away. Your clients can decide to have a destination wedding where they only have a few people, or they want to make it a big deal and everyone comes along. But just let them know that with a destination wedding, a lot of guests, it's safe to say that several guests will not be able to attend, but that is an option. And then another option that you may not have considered is your clients actually have the option to elope. And elope doesn't just mean heading over to Vegas and getting married there. It's quite possible for someone to elope in the city where they are, because an elopement really is about the couple and about them doing this their way. And sometimes with wedding planning, and I can say this even as a wedding planner, it can get to be too much. And some people just don't want to be bothered with that. And if they want to have a special ceremony, a special arrangement between the two of them without the whole entourage and maybe do the wedding reception later on, you can provide that service. And I think as a wedding planner, you should let your clients know that that's an option. And you'll know which kind of clients may be leaning towards that. It's a step up from the Justice of the Peace or going down to the county clerk's office and having, you know, getting married that way. But you can provide your clients. I'm sorry, my screen just went blank. You can provide your clients with options to elope close to home. It's just that it's a very special situation where they're getting married between the two of them, and how, you know, whatever amenities that they want. And there's also, of course, an intimate wedding. And I kind of alluded to this earlier. A wedding doesn't have to be a big full-scale production. It can be a very intimate setting, and intimate doesn't always mean that they're going to spend less. A lot of times that's the case, but your clients, if they're having 50 guests as opposed to 150, they may not mind spending $200 per guest because they're dealing with less people. So the thinking is, these people are near and dear to me, and we don't mind spending the money to have the event that we want, but on a smaller scale. And that is an option and something that I'm actually in love with right about now. It's a smaller, intimate wedding that is about the two of them, because really the difficult part is not the wedding, it's the marriage. Wouldn't you agree? And I think sometimes we, brides, grooms, us planners, we miss that part. The marriage is the big deal. And I've said this before, I found that the smaller weddings tend to last longer. That's been my experience. Not a hard and fast rule, but that has been my experience. Okay. Also, a tip that I've utilized, which has been very handy, is to let, when you make friends with the venues, let them know that if they have a cancellation or there happens to be a week open, that you would like to know that. And then you, as a wedding planner, hopefully you're maintaining a list, an email list of people. You want to send out an email to your potential clients, even your ex-clients, your vendors, and let them know that this venue has a Saturday open in July. It may, you know, maybe everyone just assumed they were booked up. So somebody cancels something changes, or just the venue finds out that they have an open date, tell them you want to know about that. And just keep in touch with them, you know, a couple times a month, what's going on, how's everything, any cancellations, any dates, because I'd love to help you fill that venue. Venues don't want their place to sit empty. So if you can be a catalyst to help them get that spot filled up, what are they going to do? They're going to return the favor. They're going to start sending clients, if they haven't already, your way. So that's something to think about when it comes to venues. Okay. I can see you guys are busy in the chat room, and I have a feeling that we're talking about some other things. Does anyone have any questions at all for me about finding a venue for your clients? Let's see. Oh, Larissa says, when finding a venue, how soon after should we attempt to become a preferred vendor? Oh, that's a great question, Larissa. Just ask the venue. Ask them what their requirements are, because I think sometimes we assume that a preferred vendor has something to do with your capabilities. Some venues will just list you if you say that you want to be listed. Some venues, it has nothing to do with your skill or ability. If you're willing to pay, they will list you as a preferred vendor. So ask, and make sure it's a venue that you would be proud to be associated with. But it's a great way to get business without having to lift a finger. Because if you're on that list, if I go to a venue and I don't know a heck of a lot about that venue, the people that I want to contact are the people on that list, that preferred vendor list. So ask. If they don't have a preferred vendor list, tell them you'd like to get, you know, you think you'd want to, they should get that started. But Larissa, I don't think there's any set time. You just need to be comfortable with that location. And they, in turn, really should be comfortable with your capabilities. But as I've mentioned, that's not always a situation. There are different ways that you can be part of a preferred vendor list. But I mentioned this in one of our classes that we did at Wedding Business Guide, and the focus was on, if you are a day of planner, I always resort to that because I think that's a really great way to get your business off the ground. If you are a day of planner and the venue does not have they may have a sales staff, people there to get the place booked, but nothing beyond that, you are a godsend to them. So if you let them know that you want to work with them, you want to partner with them as the day of coordinator, you let them know that you're going to make their life super easy, because all they've got to do is book the business and send the clients your way. They can either build your fee into the cost of the venue, which means no matter who books will always be referred to you, or you can come up with some other arrangement. You can pay them a referral fee so that if any client books with you, you give them a salesperson, I don't know, $50, $100, depending on what your fee is. I think that's fair. So it's a different arrangement, and it's however you want to set it up. But you've got to position it in a way that it's a great benefit for them, that they get that they're going to get something wonderful out of the deal. And for the most part, most salespeople don't want to be bothered with the nitty-gritty details and hand-holding the bride and, you know, hand-holding for the bride and groom. They don't want to do that. They don't have time. They just want the place booked. So if you can present yourself as a huge solution for them, they will want you as the preferred vendor and hopefully maybe even the exclusive wedding planner. I mentioned this, I don't know if you're part of that class, that when I said I was throwing out ideas to someone about one of the venues, Linda, at one of the locations here off premise, and I said I would do that, and she was like, oh my gosh, Debbie, yes, please send me your information. Didn't have the information to send her, but send me the information. Yeah, we'd love to have, you know, that would be great. Then as our clients come in, we'll just send them your way, and you can take it from there. They were happy to send that business to me. So something to think about. Don't sit on that. If you are a part-time wedding planner, even if you're not and business is slow, make it your point to go and visit these venues with the goal of learning about them. But any venue that is stripped down just to the bare essentials, you want to make sure that you are the wedding planner of choice, that you are the preferred vendor, and explain to them not just what you can do for their clients, but what you can do for them. You'll be familiar with the site. Your staff is familiar with the location. You'll take care of it. You know what works. You know the layout, all the rest of that. That's what they want. They want to see that consistency. Okay? All right. What are the questions? Larissa, I hope that answers your question. You guys are very busy in the chat room. What have I missed? Anything? You can just post it again. So please make it your business to get out there and start visiting the venues. Venues are easy. Even if you feel, and I hope you don't feel that way, but even if you feel somewhat intimidated or a little reluctant to go and talk to vendors. Venues are easy because you're just going to look around the place to see if this could be a fit for your clients. It may be the VFW hall. It may be, you know, if you go to an event, like if you go to a restaurant, every time you dine out, I would ask the maitre d' or whomever, my wait person, ask them, do you have a separate room for private parties? And if they do, ask to take a look at it. Remember, all weddings are not created equal. So go take a look at that space while you're there, maybe while you're waiting for your meal. Just take a peek, take a picture or two and say, something to think about. This might work for my client's wedding. And even if it's not for the wedding, it might be the perfect spot for wedding rehearsal dinner. It might be the perfect spot for bridal shower. It might be the perfect spot for the post-wedding brunch. You want to be the resource that comes through. Remember, I mentioned earlier before the official start of the show that the event I had this week had nothing to do with the wedding, but it was based on a job that I did for this client earlier this year, and he remembered me and asked me to help with that. That's what's going to happen. So I know we all want to be the glamorous wedding planners that are out there doing the big full-scale productions, but it takes a few years, actually, for people to recognize you as a leader in your field. I think that's safe to say that the time has cut down because of everyone being online and social media, but the consistency is what people want to see. And if you're willing to do some of the work that isn't as glamorous right now, you're going to see some money coming in, and that's just going to give you the incentive and spur you on to do other things. People will reach out to you. You just want to be ready that when someone contacts you, that you're ready to go. That's not the time for you to learn what works and what doesn't. Get some of the legwork done now. That would be my suggestion. Larissa has a question. Would you say finding venues for elopements would work? Oh, I love that. That's a wonderful idea, Larissa. Yes. Yes. Those would be some great blog posts too. Yeah, because it's a different type of setup. So if someone's eloping in their own city, oh my gosh, I can think of a few places right now. I may need to take up that idea, Larissa. That's a great idea. So you want to remember, there are lots of wedding planners or aspiring wedding planners. You want to do something that's different, that's going to set you apart. And I know human nature is that if you do that, you're going to lose some business. Yeah, I guess you will. But you're not losing the business that you want. People that want what you're specializing in will come to you. Those that don't will go somewhere else. Isn't that what you want? I would think that's what you want. You want to do the weddings that you want to do. Have that set in sound. You want to do the weddings you want to do. Right? Yeah. So just specializing and look at what's trending. Look at what people are doing. When I read an article, like when I started, when you, Larissa, you asked about the proposal planning, and I had seen some articles and I had gone through and looked through some of them. It's a really interesting field. It's a great niche. And you notice that I'm saying niche and not niche anymore. So it's a great niche, but it's something that appeals to a lot of guys. A lot of guys like the idea of the proposal planning. But the thing with the proposal planning is you're not front and center. The whole thing is, for most part, the person, and usually guys, it's not just guys, but the guys are getting the props for coming up with a fantastic proposal. You're just in the background. So you're just sort of working all the magic, and he's getting, the fiance's going, oh my gosh, I can't believe you did all that. And you're doing your work in the background. So you're kind of, you're not front and center, but you're getting business. Now, when she says yes, do you think he's coming your way for the planning process? I'm going to guess that, yeah, he's going to give you a call. So just start thinking of how you can get your little corner, your little piece of that. And proposal planning could work pretty well, I think, even if you have a full-time job, because probably the proposal is going to happen after work hours. But you can come up with all those resources now. And your target now, of course, would be maybe, you know, where the guys congregate, because that's who tends to use the proposal planning. And most of the guys that use that service aren't very creative, or they don't have time. So who are the time-strapped males? And who are the, you know, where are you going where the guys are not overly creative? That can open up a market. I mean, you can have something very basic for a few hundred, or go all the way out to a few thousand. I think that's a really, really great way. All the while building your business, blogging, getting information, Larissa, finding the locations where one can elope in your area. So start thinking outside the box. Yep, Larissa said he better use your services, right, for your wedding planning after you've gone through all that trouble. So that's really what I wanted to share with you. Do you see how just focusing on venues can kind of just sort of like spiraling out into all the different areas of getting your business going? There's a lot that we can do right now if you don't have clients. And as you start researching and talking to venues, talking to people that are running venues and vendors, business is going to begin to trickle in, and you're going to learn so much more than you can ever find out that from sitting at your desk and Googling, you know? So just go out there and, you know, do something more. Helga, you're saying you sent some questions via my website. I think I did. A lot of the questions that come in, I try to answer as a group. Helga, I think were you the person that asked about a contract? Because somebody did. There is a contract on weddingsforaliving.com. On the and I may be wrong, Helga, maybe that wasn't one of your questions. I think you may have asked about pricing too. But if you go to weddingsforaliving.com and search for the word contract, there's a page about what to include in your wedding planner's contract. There is a sample letter of agreement, which is a contract. So you can use that as a starting point. I don't know if it wasn't clearly obvious, but I just wanted to make sure that you know that contract exists. It's there. You shouldn't use it as is. You want to use that as a starting point and get that tweaked by a local attorney, ideally. Okay, but there is one there. Okay. All right. Oh, Deborah asked, she's asking Larissa, but I'm jumping in anyway. with your intimate weddings, what is the maximum number of guests for an intimate wedding? Larissa's saying no more than 25. Oh, Helga, that wasn't you. Okay, sorry. No more than 25. But, you know, 50, I think anything less than 100 is somewhat of an intimate wedding. I'd go as high as 50. I would say 50 people is a fairly intimate wedding, because I would have a party at my home and have 50 people. And I think if that's still relatively small compared to a wedding. But Deborah, to answer that question, it can be whatever you decide for it to be. So you can say, I plan intimate weddings with a guest list of 50 people or less. And that's you. Larissa may say, I plan intimate wedding with a guest list of 25 people or less. It's whatever you want it to be. And then people can sort of feel if that works for them or not. So you may decide that it's 25 people or less. And then someone would say, hey, we're going to have about 40 to 50 people. Do you think you can still help us? Yeah, more than likely, right? It's all in the same kind of area. So just pick something and go with it. Don't do what I do and go crazy trying to come up with it to be an exact science. try something and just move forward with it. If it doesn't work, then you tweak it again. But you may surprise yourself that what you were unsure about actually works perfectly. Okay? So just get out there. Imperfect action. Just take action. Okay. 50. Yeah, Larissa, you don't think 50 people? Oh, you mean at my house? I make it sound like I have a big house. I think 50 people. I've had parties here and had 50 people. They're all standing. But I mean, I've had 50 people. I think that's a nice... I think that's still an intimate wedding. I don't know. Maybe that's me. Maybe I'm not as refined as I think. You thought it was a lot? Yeah. I thought 50 people. I think 50 people for a wedding is relatively, as a relatively small wedding. Yeah, I think so. Cozy. Yeah. There you go. Cozy weddings. Hey, that's a good URL if that's available. Okay. All right. I think that's about it, my loves. If you have any questions, please reach out. You can go to, oh, Helga, you asked about pricing. Okay. Yeah. See, pricing is something that we talked about on Wedding Business Guide. So Helga, I'll try to get to that, in an upcoming episode, but I'm glad you pointed that out. I will double check that for you. Okay, so thank you for tuning into the show. If you're based in the United States and would like to receive a text message when the next live show is about to begin, simply text the word CONFETTI to the number 71441. Standard message and data rates may apply. Remember, CONFETTI is on iTunes as a podcast and Facebook and Twitter. I'm Debbie Quain. Be sure to join me for the next live show on Tuesday, September 17th at 8 p.m. Eastern. As always, love and success. Have a great evening.
The Wedding Business Talk Show.